If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
Hey, what do you know? Today is Wednesday. It is December 13th, 2017. It's 11:10 in the morning. I'm John Williams, and this is a very special edition of the Mincing Rascals podcast. If you like this, you should listen to my weekday show Monday through Friday from 1 to 3 on WGN.
You should have seen John arrived in his horse this morning. I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
I'm Kristen McQuarrie with the Trib Editorial Board, and did you see one of the headlines today? F you, Roy Moore, and the horse you rode in.
That wasn't the Tribune, was it?
I don't think we use F.
It's pretty amazing that what's happened. I mean, look at the editorial by the USA Today today.
Oh, yeah.
But
no,
I digress.
Go. And I'm Scott Stannis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, creator of the comic strip Prickly City, and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I'm Eric Zorn, the pleasantly surprised columnist for the Tribune. I think I'm on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays, but... Everyone,
you think?
Everyone reads them on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays because of digital. You know, we're digital first now. So,
obviously, the big story this week is Democrat Doug Jones upset Republican Roy Moore and the horse he rode in on in Alabama's special election yesterday. While the president says he was right in saying Roy Moore couldn't win a general election, he endorsed him and Moore lost. I'll just note at the outset that 98% of the black women who voted, 98% voted for Jones. 72% of white men, Eric pointed out, white men suck, voted for Moore. 63% of white women who voted for Moore. 57% of white college-educated women voted for Moore. So maybe this is a great day for America, or maybe it's not, since this race ended in a virtual tie. What was it like in your
virtual
house?
Virtual tie? Time? What do you mean virtual tie?
It was a virtual tie. I mean, it was 1.5%.
Oh, which is exactly.
Would not have gotten any closer.
By the way, it's exactly what I predicted.
Yeah, notice that. You had not only the winner, but the percent right before the polls closed.
Look, yes, sir. It is very difficult for us to change our habits, whether we vote Democrat or whether we vote Republican. That's what we do, and we tend to find stories that support the way we vote. What did Donald Trump carry to Alabama by 28 points, I think, last year? So for the Democrat in this candidate, Roger... I've lost his name.
Doug Jones.
For Roger to turn around from a 28% deficit to a 1.5% increase in Alabama, I think it's more than I think it was way more than a tie. I mean, I think the odds were way against
him. I don't think any Republicans changed their votes. Republicans still voted for.
I don't think that's true. I think in suburban areas of Alabama, this is my reading of the results, was that a lot of them either stayed home or did vote for Jones.
They didn't. It just wasn't a turnout thing that. Turn this. There
See, was that's
some
how I was reading it. That
well,
no
it,
Republicans who would have otherwise voted for Moore said, "You know what? I'm going to vote for Jones." Rather, they just didn't vote. That the Democrats got out more votes.
Well, the get out the vote push was remarkable. If you look at the numbers in the traditionally black section, the Black Belt, which was the top one, but it's also primarily Selma's in there. It's mostly African American now. It was remarkable. The get out the vote effort was Herculean, and that's what put him over the top. Some Republicans did not vote for Roy Moore. They did one of two things. They either did a write-in, which they wrote for Nick Saban, who's the head coach of the University
of Alabama.
Is that
what they did? Is that what the write-in was?
No, write-in vote was mostly
might
that.
Might as well.
Or they held their nose and voted for Doug Jones. I know both these guys. I've covered Roy Moore when I worked at the Birmingham News for 14 years.
You're not a fan.
No, he's a monster. He's a horrible human being.
Do you know Jones?
I know Doug Jones was actually the head of my Leadership Birmingham class in 2004. So I've smoked cigars with him, had cocktails with him.
What do you think of him?
Smart, good guy. Got the last two convictions in the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing. I mean, this is a guy who is competent and smart, but he's also extreme. He'd be liberal if he came here to Chicago.
Oh, really?
So
because I figured he'd be a moderate.
Yeah, it's a strange mix right now. I'm not convinced he'll win re-election in 2020. But thank goodness. I mean, the Republicans, of all people, if you watched Fox News this morning, are the ones signing because they don't have to deal with him. He would have raised tens of millions of dollars for the Democratic Party had he won. He would have, because he's a maniac. He's not too bright. He's mean, and he's kind of cray-cray.
Where were you on this one, Kristen? Did you have a horse in this race? Did you have
she
a
prediction? Rode that horse to the studio today?
I really don't. I mean, I sort of thought the first initial Washington Post story about the accusers was very credible. And then I just sort of tuned out. I'm not familiar with the yearbook stuff and all this. I just didn't follow the play-by-play. I was surprised when I was watching it last night that it was as close as it was, because I thought that this would be more of a when the other fellow senator, whose name is escaping
me, Richard Shelby.
Yes, when he was compelling to me, saying, we can do better. And so to me, I thought that was more of the theme, that we can do better. And yet, it doesn't surprise me terribly that Roy Moore hung in there, because there is a huge conservative base of voters who will hold their nose and vote for someone they don't like because they are extremely concerned about the makeup of the Supreme Court and other policy issues that I am sure a lot of them did go and vote based on that. They are worried about the makeup of the Senate. There also is a healthy skepticism about accusers coming forward at the last minute. And I think both of those factors played into the fact that he did hang in there until the very end.
Well, I don't think you can discount the importance of the abortion issue in this. Every conversation I heard about it that went in depth indicated that a lot of people were, as Kristen puts it, holding their noses and voting for Moore because they felt that he was on their side of the abortion issue, which is and there are a lot of people, and that is the main issue for them in politics. And Doug Jones is strongly pro-abortion rights.
He's very liberal on just about every key area, where I could see it would be difficult for Republicans who showed up to actually cast a vote for him. He's pretty liberal.
So he's not going to pull a Shelby and switch parties? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think so. But my guess is that
Shelby was elected as a Democrat.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
My guess is that Chuck Schumer is going to let or encourage Jones to vote some conservative and Republican positions as he goes along, as his vote is perhaps not needed for things, in order to maybe make him a little bit more palatable to Alabama voters in 2020, which is when he has to run again. So,
to keep him in, to help him win re-election.
I mean, I don't think that strategy could possibly work. Scott would know Alabama much better than I do. But
I don't know what it was like at your houses last night, if you were paying any attention to it. We were deliberately not paying attention, but paying attention. You know, it's like, I'm not going to look.
You didn't have one of those parties like you had for Hillary Clinton?
I sent him a text.
The blue martini. You didn't have blue martinis this time?
I actually texted him. I asked him if he had blue
John
drinks.
John is rubbing his forehead right now.
Yeah, I know. And I'm going to let you enjoy this, because Bertrand literally said, do you have blue cocktails out tonight? And I'm like, no. I had that same sick, I feel bad for America, what's happened to my country feeling all night long.
Yeah.
And then like a horse race, we're out of the far turn, the underdog nips the favorite at the wire. That's what happened. Brenda was in bed. I walked into the room and said, Moore lost. And by the way, that was the first headlines I saw. Moore lost,
yes,
not
exactly.
Jones won.
Right.
Moore lost. And literally people were texting and tweeting tears. They were crying.
Oh,
they
yeah,
so,
no.
Happy for
America. No, that wasn't me. I wasn't crying, Kristen.
But happy
don't
for
give
America.
Me that look.
I mean, I can't help it. Let's tone down the hysterics about it.
This was a great night for America.
It is an overstatement.
It is?
Yeah, absolutely.
That is? Why? Why
you
is
think
that?
So?
Well, I mean, he did win. I mean, you know, it's one race. The guy was a clown. I mean, the guy running was a clown. Take the sexual perversity away from it. The guy just has a recordness of clown.
Well, unless a violent clown, because this is a guy who's quoted as saying,
but he has Jewish friends.
A lawyer. He's a Jewish lawyer.
But that was her. That's what she was trying to say.
He said,
right?
One of our attorneys is a Jew. But this is also a guy. Roy Moore was quoted in his first term as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court saying, "It is the righteous. We can use the righteous sword to get rid of homosexuals." The implication strongly was, "It's okay to kill them."
Right. There was a potential for loss here. There wasn't a great potential for gain, I don't think.
And the only downside for me is that my wife is now in love with Steve Kornacki.
Really?
Yes. She was just like, yeah.
Tell us
this
who Steve Kornacki is.
Steve Kornacki is the guy on MSNBC who's at the big board.
That's why I haven't seen it.
Who goes and he circles the county and goes, we're getting returns from here.
Well, you know, it was dramatic with him. And then
she went through a lot with him last night. I wasn't home.
And I was reading a book. I'm like,
Johanna,
they bonded.
So cute.
I know. I'm thinking,
I
have to buy khaki.
You looked at the early exit polls and the college-educated people and how they were voting. I'm like, okay, Moore's going to win. I was reading a book and getting ready to go to bed, I think, at like 9:30.
Why do I need to stay up here and let them hit
and
me
then
on the head
when, And then it was like the racehorse coming in at the wire. It happened so fast.
Let me jump in. Because Janine, my wife, and I, we still have friends. My son still lives in Alabama. We still have a house there. We still have a connection with friends. So we really vested, and we know Roy Moore, sadly. And so we started watching the returns, and as soon and you know, Chris, when you say stop the dramatics, this is, we really felt strongly about this one for very personal and real reasons, and I think national concerns. But when the election started to tighten up, I said, I can't watch this. And I know that sounds, for someone who's been covering these things for 40 years, you should be able to handle it. But I just, you know what? I don't have to right now. I just turned it off. And I, before we went to bed around 11, I turned on my, opened up my laptop to fake New York Times with their headline. And
Failing New York Times.
Failing New York Times. And I took the headline. I carried it into Janine was getting ready for bed into the restaurant. I said, Janine, I looked really sad. She goes, no, what? What? Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. And I opened it up. And she goes, yes!
Yeah, but when I saw that, I thought, oh, no. The New York Times said... The New York Times,
right?
You know, might not be a harbinger of truth on a close election. So I was worried that I didn't want to enjoy it too much. But then I went over to Fox News and saw, you know, that Fox News and CNN and left and right drudge were all calling it. Drudge. So
I want to hear what Kristen and Matt were doing last night. Were you?
I was helping my kids with homework and reading Augie and Me with my son. That's what I was doing.
You know how that ends, right?
The second book?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, do you even know what it is?
And is it
it's
Marley
the sequel
and Me?
To Wonder.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, the president has said that Kristen Gillibrand, the New York Democrat senator, would, quote, come to my office begging for campaign contributions not so long ago, parentheses, and would do anything for them, and is now fighting against Trump. Sarah Sanders said that that was not sexist, and if you had or heard any innuendo there, then you've got your mind in the gutter. How did you all hear that? When you first read that or heard that text, that tweet by the president, did you think it was a slur, or was that just him describing anybody who's doing anything for money?
I think you could read it that way, but I think if you put it all in context, that it was sexual, that there was some, I mean.
I read it that way.
You read it sexual.
I read it and went, that's incredible.
I did, and then I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt, and you know what I'm thinking? Well, because he has said, you know, all politicians will come and ask him for anything.
He said that about other male politicians.
But just in the horror
anything?
Of everything, and in parentheses, that's the other thing. Like, that's a wink, wink, nod, nod. And she'd do anything, you know? So,
what,
I mean,
why do we even try to get in his head? She could have been
off.
She was a member of Congress from New York. He was a wealthy New York financier who loved to play politics. She could have promised that she was going to vote a certain way or introduce an amendment to something. I'm not suggesting that your theory isn't right, but I didn't immediately go there. What I find irritating is that none of the mainstream media who covered this, everyone got hung up on the, is he being sexual? Did she go groveling for campaign contributions?
And Trump, if so, Trump and his daughter gave $7,000 over the past few years.
Okay, well, this is the question that never gets asked. When there's a campaign contribution that is questionable, the media says, you need to give this back, and then the person gives back the check, and then the story moves on. The issue is, what was the relationship in the first place that brought you two together that you're asking for campaign contributions? Were you at lunch? Were you at Mar-a-Lago? What was your relationship with him that you're asking him for money? And she doesn't even address that. Gillibrand. Everyone just sweeps over that.
What's the problem if she asks for campaign contributions?
If you are asking for campaign contributions from Donald Trump, and then you are turning around and refuting his tweet, but in fact, what he said was correct. She was in there groveling. I think you're not being truthful.
Kristen, none of that matters. It was about the parentheses.
It was what was in parentheses.
But to you, it doesn't matter. It matters to me when campaign contributions exchange hands, what that relationship was in the first place. And I think just in general, the media doesn't dig enough on those issues.
I totally agree with Kristen about campaign contributions. I think the whole thing is sleazy and dubious and questionable. And I think we do need to ask more questions about what the relationship is and what's expected from these contributions. I think it's absolutely right. What I understand about this is that it was a one-time meeting in 2010, back when Trump was giving a lot of money to Democrats, and that Ivanka was in the room with Donald, so that the implication that she was offering some sort of sexual favor, which I definitely read, is very ugly. I think without the remarks in the parentheses, it just would have been another stupid, you know, she's an ingrate.
She said he should resign. Well, of course she's going to say that. Who cares? That's not a news story. The only reason we're talking about this is because of the sexual innuendo in this thing.
Well, and she's now a rising star in the Democratic Party, and good for her. She's been really on top of sexual assault in the military and all these different issues. She also, when she first ran, was considered a Sarah Palin-esque candidate. She has a 100% voting record from the NRA. She was anti-immigration. She was anti-gay marriage. And now she has evolved to a point where even the New York Times has called her rootless. So I think all of these issues deserve
You've got my jaw dropping here, Kristen. None of that matters anything. None of that. That doesn't count a whit. What we're talking about here is the president of the United States implying that she got that she offered or had sex with him in order to get money. What she stands for or how she's changed her position, and we can argue that and fight that, fine. She would have to defend that. That's not what this conversation is. This
I
is
agree
the president
with you. I'm going
that.
Off on a little bit of a tangent on her kind of becoming this rising star with the Democratic Party and a deeper exploration of where she stands on issues. So I went off on a little tangent. I agree with
Come
you.
Back.
Okay. I just Donald Trump, was he probably being sexual? He probably was. This is how he is. Again, I have this conversation with you guys every week, but I didn't automatically.
That's why she caught.
I didn't automatically go
up.
There. Yeah. Well.
We appreciate you being here, and I appreciate your perspective. But I'm with Steve on this. I think all of that is sort of beside the point. We're not having this conversation unless he insinuated that she was willing to trade sex for money. And that's a horrible thing to say unless it's true. And even then, I'm not sure if he should be saying it in a tweet.
Is there, Kristen, I understand, and I respect you, you think that we spend too much time on these tweets, but is there nothing he can tweet that you think would be offensive or would rise down that? Well, I'm not joking.
Oh, no, it is. It's everything he tweets is offensive. I'm just not going to be offended 365 days a year.
Well, sometimes it's twice a day.
Eight or nine times a day when he... Listen, I'm not a defender of Donald Trump, but I will offer an alternative perspective. I didn't automatically go there that he was... Who knows what she was promising?
Right,
I mean, I don't know.
Are you also saying, though, that you would be upset if there was no reference to... The sexist comment wasn't there. You would still be curious or upset by her going to him for a campaign contribution, even if he hadn't said she was willing to trade sex.
I would want a lot more information about that because his everyone he has touched now is tainted in some way.
Really? I mean, that she went to him for a campaign contribution is, I don't know, at the time, was that such a... Poor judgment.
I want to know more about it. I want to know more about it. Like I said, where did it happen? Because campaign contributions are about relationships, and I don't believe that anybody really writes a campaign check for someone unless they are sort of expecting something in return.
A big campaign
legislatively.
Check. I would make that a big campaign check. I mean, people write $20, $50, $50, $100
sure.
checks.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I would agree
return.
With that.
But if someone's giving $10,000,
but if you're in a room with Donald Trump. There is something that led up to that moment, and I just would like to have known more about the exploration of that instead of all of the information.
But wait, go ahead, John.
No.
I mean, she's a sitting senator. Senators or members of Congress, they raise money. They go to the money in their district or
She's
state.
A Democrat, right, and Trump
and
is a Republican.
He's a Democrat.
He wasn't then.
He gave her money. I mean,
those 19 A-list Illinois politicians filed that amicus brief saying we need clarity on what's the difference between a bribe and a campaign contribution. Blagojevich is in jail. And so who was it that was on that list? It was a lot of names that we know. We're wondering out loud a week ago, what is and isn't an appropriate ask for money? And what do we, you know, what can we offer in return? I think that's an interesting issue. But I just didn't think that her asking for money automatically made her sound or seem corrupt.
No, I don't think Kristen is saying corrupt. I think she just wants to know more about you know what's the implication of this? Why is he supporting her? What is she saying? What is she offering him in return? And that doesn't have to be sexual, right? I mean, why is he giving her money? And he's talked about this before.
But then you would never take or give a campaign contribution.
Yeah, you got to remember though that the three of us here work in a industry. Newspapers where we basically can't take anything from anybody.
Yeah.
We can't go out to lunch with people. They can't pick up the check. So.
That sucks for you guys.
That'd be hard.
Will County Assessor Joe Berrios.
Oh, gosh.
Will the Cook County Assessor Joe Berrios win a re-election in Schutte? The County Assessor, according to two huge studies by the Tribune and ProPublica, consistently undervalues expensive homes and businesses in Cook County and consistently undervalues or overtaxes, overvalues and overtaxes less expensive property. This is a little wonky and people hate math, but it looks like he's either incompetent or corrupt. Eric,
can't
he
be both?
Is he? Oh, yeah, and he could be neither.
Aim high, aim high. It's Cook County.
What should happen to Joe Barrios?
Well, I think he should be defeated at the primary.
He's being challenged, right?
I think it was a creditable challenge. Fritz Kage, is that how you say his last name?
There's two. Andrea Rayla, who's a property tax attorney, and Fritz Kage.
And I don't know if those two are how those two match up. I haven't really studied anyone's resume yet. I think Fritz Kage has a more of a head start on the campaign. Seems to be more organized, at least judging from my email inbox. I think that the way the property tax system here, the thing that actually really offends me about a lot of this is that they refuse to show their work product. I mean, you want to know what do they look at when they assess your business, your home? What are the factors? How do they weigh them? And Barrios has gone to court to fight rulings that say that he's got to turn over this stuff to people who ask for it.
I don't understand that. What does he have to gain by not being more transparent?
I really don't know, and I've asked his spokesman this, and I've written a column about it before. Just like it's outrageous. This ought to be something that we know so that we can figure out whether he's doing his job properly.
Because there isn't a process. I don't think they have anything to turn over. I think that's what the series has shown, is that they're not using market sales studies, which is basically when you sold your place in Minnesota, mm-hmm. that's the market value of your home, whatever the market paid for it, right? And in Cook County, they don't take that number and immediately apply it to your home. So it's still kind of this big guessing game of uniformity and where you live. And they sort of count on people appealing their taxes in order to even out the numbers. Those are both wrong. He's not assessing property the way other assessors do it. And I think that's why he's not turning anything over, because especially with these big wigs, I think it all comes down to a negotiation. And that was brought up in the stories, too. The assessments are negotiated between attorneys, and that's crazy.
The stories are must reading, by the way. You've got to go on Tribune Online. Tribune and ProPublica together put this investigation together, and they find things like he'll value a certain property at an exact dollar amount, and then they'll appeal it. It'll get knocked back down, and then the next cycle they'll assess it at the exact same amount.
Right. For 9 straight years, a property will have to the penny the same valuation.
And that suggests, as Kristen says, that there is no actual process. And
that if you have an attorney, you can maybe get it lowered. But
and let's not forget who those attorneys are. It's Ed Burke, who is head of the Finance Committee in the City Council. It is Mike Madigan, the Speaker for Life of Illinois. And so you have very powerful people.
And Joe Barrios is the Cook County Democratic Party chairman.
And here's the problem, and it's a serious problem. If Barrios is defeated at any stage of this election process, the unemployment rate for the Barrios family goes up to 90%.
Well, that's why I asked, is this incompetence or is this corruption? You're making me think it's stinky, and you guys were making me think, no, they just don't know what the hell they're doing. Maybe it's some combination thereof. I don't know. But
Scott votes for both.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that Kage and also Andrea Rayla, is that
Rayla.
Mm-hmm. Rayla, both of them are experienced in this area and actually have this background. And Barrios is just came up as a politician.
No, he started out on the Board of Review. So he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly how assessments work. He's been doing that job now. At the Board of Review, he dealt with appeals. Now he's dealing with the actual assessments. I just think it's a clouded system. And I think we all sort of know that. But what the stories do is take out the emotion and put data together that shows that it's just broken.
This time last week, by the way, Alabama was a solid red state. Omarosa had a bright future in the White House. The Bears and Bulls were always terrible, and Forrest Claypool ran the Chicago Public Schools. All of that has changed this week. Bama's now purple in the Senate. Omarosa will leave in January. The Bears won.
Well, she got forced. She was escorted out.
I saw that, and I didn't know what that meant.
Amish Alcindor, I think the New York Times reporter, they're tweeting out today that, they're saying she went to pursue her own.
Well, I read she's going to keep her job.
Spend more time with her family.
Spend more time with her family.
So she's no longer under the employ of the White House?
Well, they're saying in their tweets, I don't know if it's been printed yet, that Kelly fired her, that there's a huge shouting match, that some of the words weren't nice words, and that she was escorted off the property.
What was she doing there anyway? She really didn't have a job. And now that Kelly is in, her job was even vaguer still. I believe she was the deputy of constituent services or something. She was a contestant on his TV show. She was African-American. I think those were two things that helped her walk in the door. Well, anyway, she's out, right? Bama looks a little bit different. And, Flores, this is all just to get to a place.
I'm sorry.
And Forrest Claypool was in charge of the Chicago Public Schools. The Tribune said that while Claypool did wrong, his good outweighed his bad in their editorial, even though he lied repeatedly to investigators. What do you guys think? Should Forrest Claypool? I was surprised at the Tribune's editorial position on this.
I was too.
And I was a little disappointed. I'm like, are you kidding
Sometimes
me?
We don't see everything until it shows up.
Yeah.
You know, we're churning through stuff.
You didn't write that editorial.
I did not.
Yeah.
No. We just sort of open the paper and go, wait, we what?
We said
you guys
what?
Don't even really, you don't, it's not like you don't even vote on editorials, right?
We don't really vote, no. I mean, most we meet twice a week and we discuss things, but this was, I don't think, something that we, it moved very quickly, too. Like, we ran the first version, and then he resigned, and then we ran a second version.
But before the resignation, I mean, he was still having his job, and so the Tribune's editorial position was, this will teach the next guy, if you lie to investigators, we're going to take it seriously. And I thought, no, what it'll teach the next guy is you can get away with it. Here we are still saying you should lie to investigators and keep your job if you're doing a pretty good job.
It really looks, if you look at the TikTok of what happened here, it looks like, you know, Forrest Claypool hired to be this attorney, a guy who he was friends with back when he was with Jenner, and then he went and he was working with somebody else at Jenner, who he was buddies with from some other guy who maybe had been his attorney at the Park District or something like that. But anyway, it was like it was very, a lot of cronyism going on. And it doesn't look like the offense was so bad.
Right.
I mean, because he was like, this one guy who was working for the schools was monitoring the activity of Jenner. And he had a financial relationship with them, which was, he was just getting a payout. So it was like,
basically, he wanted to protect his friend. He wanted this corporate counsel, and then it became clear that there was going to be a conflict because of the way CPS's ethics rules are written. He tried to protect him, and he doctored
things.
Receipts. So, I mean,
He
went through six legal opinions, and all of them said, you can't do this. The seventh one said, you can.
Who was another buddy of his, right?
And he said, okay, that's the one we're going to go with. And then he tried to doctor the receipts so that it didn't look like it was for an ethics investigation review. And then he lies about it repeatedly to investigators to their face.
And I have to say, I was surprised. I mean, I have a fairly high opinion of Forrest Claypool.
I do too.
He's done some good work along the way. And I was surprised that he would end his public career on something this stupid.
We talked to Nicholas Schuller, the
Inspector General.
The Inspector General for the public schools. And it was very interesting. Steve was there. So we had him on for about 20 minutes.
Right.
He's pretty deadpan. He, you know, was just laying out the case, and, you know, he said that he was disappointed in the Tribune's editorial as well.
John said goodbye.
Moments later, Claypool said, I'm out. So then we put him back on, and this guy refused to spike the ball and do an end zone dance. He was just very, well, you know, that's the work that we do here, blah, 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 blah.
This is the second best interview John had on his show this week.
We'll get to the best one in a minute. It was Corey Lewandowski, but more about that when we do our recommendations.
That was going to be mine.
Okay, so so does anybody else have anything else to say about Forrest Claypool? Scott, Eric, Kristen, are the public schools better that Claypool is out? Or should he have stayed in?
No, I mean, I think that was what the editorial was trying to say, is that he has been good. If you're thinking of from the viewpoint of the children, he has done better by the school district. I mean, he was handed a district that's on the brink of bankruptcy, and graduation rates are a little better. And I think we also have Forrest Claypool has always been a pretty straight shooter.
That's a great background, too.
So that was I think, the point.
So he's gone. A good government guy is gone for being caught doing this, and Joe Berrios is still sitting in the assessor's office.
And being defended by his fellow Democrats.
Yeah, although I heard from people whose opinions I respect about this Claypool thing, because we had a couple conversations about it, and I was on the fence, and they said, why are we making this so difficult? If you lie, if you cheat, if you steal, these are all crimes of a similar nature. You have to go now. We shouldn't obfuscate about this. Goodbye. It's very easy. Don't worry about it. He lied to investigators. He's the head of the thing. Out you go.
He's the head of the thing.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Our recommendations of the week. Steve, what would you recommend? Watch, read, listen to, consume?
I'm not going to recommend the book, but I will recommend an interview Williams did. Why not?
Go ahead. Just
with Corey Lewandowski, the former campaign manager of Donald Trump. Let Trump Be Trump is the name of the book. And I think we found during the interview that we just need to let Corey be Corey.
Yeah, no kidding. So that's your recommendation.
Well, tell me about the interview. I teased it a little bit.
Well, so you talk. You're gonna. It's your baby. But so Corey Lewis, that he comes on, and right away he's got his dukes up. I mean, he's like. You know,
I said I noticed in the back flap of the book, Sean Hannity, Laurie Ingraham, and others are endorsing the book. You know, they get a favorable review on the back flap. I said I don't see the president's review, and yet there he is with his red "Make America Great Again" hat on the front. Has the president read it and has he endorsed it? He said, "Yeah, I gave him a copy." I said, "Oh, did you personally give him a copy?" He said, "Yeah, I handed it to him." I said, "Oh, that's interesting because I didn't know what your relationship was like now that you were dismissed from the campaign if you had any regular contact with him."
And then Corey said, "Well, if you kept up with the day's news, you would know that."
And if
then
you
he
read
said,
the book,
and if you read
know
the book,
the end,
you would know it.
I mentioned that I have regular contact with him.
So at one point, I interjected and said, "My friend John does listen to the news because I give it to him, and I know he reads the book." And so then later in the interview, we asked him about the Trump tweet. And, you know, I said, "Mr. Corey Lewandowski, you know the president."
Huh? Which tweet?
The Gillibrand tweet. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're talking about how you know him. You gave him the book. What do you think he meant? What do you think he meant when he used those words? And he said, "Well, I'm really not up to speed on that."
that is
true. And we said, "Oh, you ought to stay up on the news." But can I just show for the whole class? I know this is a podcast and you can't see it, but see how I mark up the back of the book with my pages and notes so that I make reference. This was on page 48. That was on page 121.
Wow.
So this is when I...
You actually read the books. I'm serious. No,
it's ironic that I'm one of the few hosts who does.
Larry King, you are.
And then he smacked you around.
During our crosstalk that day, he was reading the book, you know, still going over stuff. And you said, "I don't know how this is going to go." And
yeah. Well, and I did a bad job.
You did not.
Really
he did a bad job. And he did at one point. He's like, "I'm driving 90 miles an hour down the road." I was like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
So my recommendation is it's got to be up, right?
It was. Yeah, there's a podcast. Go to WGNradio.com.
Tuesday's John Williams interview.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Goodbye.
Bye.
What's your recommendation?
Okay, I don't have the article in front of me, but it's why I went off on my Gillibrand tangent, which I apologize for. But I had just read this National Review article column that's just chock full of actual facts about her record, and as she's appearing on Vogue and all these other, you know, there's all this fawning over her. I just want everyone to read the National Review column that is in this morning's online edition.
How about you?
Are we going to put links to these things on our
We'll get them all up
on the
you can, very easily
page.
At the end of this podcast.
I have two things. One, I think that because of the cultural moment, you should read this short story in the New Yorker this week that everybody is talking about, and I'm blanking on the exact title, but I think it's Cat People or Cat Person. I'm not sure which. But the New Yorker short story. It's a very interesting short story. It's about a 20-year-old woman, and she gets into this brief relationship with a 32-year-old man and has this moment of where they have sex, and she's not sure she wants to go through with it, but she goes through with it anyway. And it's got a lot of people talking about what consent means and everything. So
it's a piece of fiction, though.
It's actually fiction.
So it's not about cats?
I know. I just
not
shoot.
About cats.
Rather read about cats.
But people are just talking about it everywhere. I just recommend you read it. I didn't love it, but I thought it was really interesting. And the other thing is this is a song that we did at Songs of Good Cheer over the last weekend. And John, you were there, and Scott, you were there too. It's called "Mary Had a Baby." And Anna Jacobson sang it for us, and it's the simplest, like, Christmas lullaby. She's got this beautiful voice, and I have a YouTube video of it up online.
You do?
Oh, Anna Jacobson, "Mary Had a Baby." It's beautiful.
I read Mary Schmeek's Christmas song on the air the day after.
Oh, yeah?
And it just brings us all to tears.
Yeah.
It is as nice a Christmas song as you'll ever read, let alone hear. How about you?
Got some sad news this morning. Last night was glorious and a good moment for the country and for Alabama. But then this morning, we got the news that Pat DiNizio, the lead singer and songwriter for the Smithereens, passed away yesterday. He was 62 years old. Pat played at my launch party for my comic strip, Prickly City, back in 2004. He came to my house and performed for 2.5 hours in my living room. We stayed friends. Once a year, I always have the little coyote character in my comic strip bring Pat a cake on his birthday. Once a year, Pat would call or text or whatever and say, "Oh, my friends are, my Facebook page is blowing up because of this. Thanks so much." I drew the cover of his autobiography. We'll have the links here. And if you want to do this, do yourself a big fat favor. Listen to some Smithereens when you hear this news. And remember, he was a really good guy, wrote great music, and had a wonderful voice. Mm-hmm. And so, Pat DiNizio.
Only because I dropped the ball on the Let Trump Be Trump interview with Corey Lewandowski, am I going to recommend the book, because you didn't learn enough about the campaign or Lewandowski and his relationship with the president. And I think it's interesting. I'm not on their team, but the insight, everything from the Kentucky Fried Chicken to how he was fired, you know, it's not a political tome. It's more like, I mean, you got to admit, what was Corey Lewandowski like, and what was that? What was it like in those crazy days? And this book is about that. So this is a very tepid recommendation, but if you are interested in that, there are some amazing anecdotes and fun takeaways in Let Trump Be Trump with Corey Lewandowski and David Bossie. By the way, I'll put a note about this at the beginning of the podcast as well, but next week we're going to live stream this. Are you guys aware of that? People will be able to watch while we are talking, and they will be able to ask questions in real time. We're going to get a bell, and as soon as a good question comes in that we want to respond to, we'll ding the bell, and we'll go to that question from one of our live viewers, and we'll move it along. And their questions will cost them a donation to the Salvation Army, I think. So we'll raise a little money for the Salvation Army and be able to live interact with you. Thanks to all of you who also asked for a signed copy of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. None of us were there on the day in 1776 that it happened, but we're signing and sending out
Eric
the first
was.
50 of you that asked for them. We've already hit our limit, but thank you for that. And we'll talk to you next Wednesday, and you will see us next Wednesday. Thank you, Ben, for being our engineer. Podcast is normally produced by Elif Garris, but today Camille is doing it. Thank you, Camille, for being there. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.